Thank you. Would Tim come up and introduce our speaker? Thank you.
Hi, my name is Tim.
Hi, Tim.
And I've been had the privilege of being speaker getter for this meeting for the past 4 months, and it's really been an honor, and I recommend that commitment to anybody. It's really helped me to help my program quite a bit. And with that, I'd like to introduce from my home, one of my home groups from Simi Valley, Sherry.
Hi, I'm Sherry. And I will start as we usually start. I'm a very grateful member of this program, Al-Anon Recovery, and I'm going to try and keep myself glued here because there's a speaker, and this room is huge. Getting huger by the moment. There's a little bit of an outside issue which I have to address, and I'm going to ask your patience with it. I love to speak, and I've been gifted to be a speaker on and off throughout my many years of recovery. But of recently, I've not been doing it. And about a year and a half ago, I was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And so it gives me a little bit of a tremor, and it shows that I'm a little bit nervous now, or that anxiety comes to me. So I want to speak tonight. When Tim asked me to do so, I said, my first thought was no. And then I remembered how much I love this program and how with the tools in this program, God doesn't ask us to do anything that we cannot do. So with God's help and with your patience, I may tremble for a little bit. It has nothing to do with you. But and then I'll settle down, I'm sure. And I'm very grateful to the newcomers that are here tonight. It really reminds me that I shook on those nights too for very different reasons. It's because I was a lady who wanted very much to be in control. And I really didn't like being here. I wasn't one of those that came into the rooms back in 1982. So it's 30 years worth of recovery that you look at when you look at this white hair. And my husband, I am married to him, is the one that introduced me to this program. And I think the reason we survived is I did not get married to get divorced. And that's the honest to God truth. It had very little to do with alcoholism, to be honest with you. When he told me that what he thought he was struggling with was alcoholism, I did what I do best, and that I said, can't be. It cannot be. You can be anything other than an alcoholic. I mean, I honestly thought, honest to goodness, I was about 33 years old, and I thought, I'd rather he die. Because I had a picture of an alcoholic, and it wasn't what I was living with. And that, they told me when I came to the rooms. I first attended a good number of AA meetings with him doing this. All the time telling him no, he didn't really qualify. We walked into the rooms. It was a church. There were slogans, the steps, the traditions on the wall. I knew all those things. I had heard them before. They were platitudes as far as I was concerned. And I had a motto, and that was God helps those who help themselves. And I went with him to AA meetings for a while, and people were very tolerant of that. For a while. And then they said to me, you know, we have a room for you. And really, it was a room in the back. You had to walk all the way through the smoke at the time. And there was a small little closet. And it was a candlelight meeting, so someone mentioned a cult earlier. I was convinced. I was convinced. And the woman who was to be my sponsor that first night came up to me and she said, honey, you look a bit angry. And I went home and I told my husband, I'm not going back to that group. That woman later became my sponsor, and she was right. I was a bit angry. In fact, I was reading today in Survival to Recovery, because what got me here was my husband's alcoholism, or certainly what got me through the doors was his alcoholism. And one thing I did believe, and I believed in rather short order, that it was a family disease. I really did believe that. Because my kids, who were, I think the oldest was about, we were probably about 10 years old, 10 or 11 years old, and she loved her dad, the alcoholic. She loved him. The bitch in the family was me. And she'll tell that story today. I was the screamer. I was the yeller. When he told me, it was December 6, 1982, that what he thought he was struggling with was the disease of alcoholism, my response was, "You'll ruin Christmas." Meant it. And he did. He asked me today, he said, "Do you want me to go with you? Would it make it easier?" I said, "No." We are not the same couple today that we were then. We are the same two human beings. We have all of the same kids intact. Actually not. We have a son who was born in sobriety. He's never seen his father drink. But what I learned here, as the anger began to dissipate a little and the fear came out, and as I began to do what was suggested, go to meetings, get a sponsor, work the steps. And the people that told me that, honestly and truly back then, that I believed, many of them were in the rooms of AA. Because I saw a change. I saw a change in my husband almost instantly. He is one of those, as he tells his story, that was relieved of that addiction the moment he prayed that prayer, "God help me." And that's really his story. But that's not what happened for me. I got angrier, I got sicker in the rooms. I really did. And the things that began to manifest themselves were the people pleasing. I need you to like me. And I didn't like myself. I really did not like myself. I didn't know myself. What I learned in these rooms is I grew up with the family disease of alcoholism. And that's why when this man, who actually to this day admits that one of the reasons he married me is my folks were talking about building a bar. And I was excited because he was willing to help. And that bar was the center of our home. It was the center of our life. Because we were party people. Now, I didn't drink. I mean, I drank to try and keep up, but I wasn't really a drinker because it didn't work for me. If it had, oh my God. I probably wouldn't be alive standing here today. But he thought he had died and gone to heaven when he met my family, and he tells that story. And because he could get lost there. And, you know, I can remember leaving my folks' home, knowing there was a problem and thinking it was in our marriage, and knowing that somehow maybe God could help. This was in the drinking days. I would do things like pray for a little accident. Really, I'd put the kids in the car, and I knew he really shouldn't be driving. But maybe if there was a little accident, he'd come to his senses. And those are the kinds of things that I grew up with. In fact, I was reflecting today. I was really very blessed. We lived on a farm in Wisconsin. We moved here in 1959. So I was about 10 years old when we left. We didn't have a bar in that home, but what the center of the community was a tavern. And it's what we did on Sunday afternoons. The whole family went to church in the morning. They come home, they do chores. I see some of you nodding your heads. The kids would be propped up on the bar stool. We'd had our orange soda pop. And there was a pool table. And they drank. And it seemed perfectly normal. So when I got to the rooms and started learning about alcoholism as a disease, I laughed. I had no clue that that's really what was going on in my life, never mind his. He was getting better. He was going to AA meetings. He was working the steps. He had a sponsor. And I was sinking further and further and further because the person I went to help us with this problem when my husband made this big announcement was my father. And for the first time in my life, my dad, who was my God as I understood God, left the house. He couldn't get out of the house fast enough. I was looking to him to help me solve this problem with him. And he said, I'm sure you'll figure it out. And he was gone. And I constantly would compare. And I remember saying things like, well, you don't drink as much as so-and-so. So in these rooms, I got sicker. And it got harder. And things like fear and anger, and that insecurity, the stuff we read about in our opening, being less than, not measuring up, all those things began to surface for me. And the family that I thought I understood as loving me became further and further and further alienated. They were waiting for me to come to my senses. They thought he was a lost cause. You guys had won him over. But my dad, I think he died, really, in 2005, thinking any day now, I'll come to my senses. My family does not understand recovery, but they do understand the disease of alcoholism. And here, I've struggled with a sister who's been addicted, and I thought it was my job to fix her. Well, maybe not her, but her kids. You know, again, I would create that little crisis. And in these rooms, people said things to me like, honey, why don't you leave your little junior God button at home? And, you know, I would get angry. I mean, I would say, I'm working the steps. I know my life is unmanageable. But I always had a little tag. If only they. If only they. And, you know, it was funny. Today I was reading in From Survival to Recovery. And I don't brag about 30 years of recovery because I do it one day at a time. I am recovering. When I got here, I wanted to be recovered. Get out. Get the diploma. Get fixed. So I worked the steps, I thought, very diligently. I got a sponsor. I did everything you told me. And guess what? I wasn't happy, joyous, and free. And that's what I wanted. I bought a license plate holder that said happy, joyous, and free. And so I knew that's what I was looking for, and I heard that in these rooms, but it didn't equate to my life. And today, in reading from the book, From Survival to Recovery, I have had an awareness. Someone was talking about the action. I am a lady of action. What I've learned in these rooms is there's two things that come before action. Awareness and acceptance. Now, you probably know that. And I know it too intellectually, but living it, that's recovery for me today. And I was reading, there's 20 questions in the middle of this book. I brought it because at the end there's some conditional promises if we do it, and I'm going to ask someone to read it a little later. But there's 20 questions, and it says, when difficulties occur, do you need someone to blame even if it's yourself? That's the first question. And my answer today, fully recovered, is yes. I do, and that's why I keep coming back. I do need someone to blame. And you know, so my first thought is really not my best. My first thought is usually an old thought. So what I've learned here are funny little things. I've built a toolbox. And I almost brought it with me, but there wasn't room in the Prius. Because some friends volunteered to pick me up, to get me here, which I'm very grateful for, and came out with me from CME. That's terrific. Because today I have friends. When Brian said he was an alcoholic and, you know, we needed to work these steps and we needed to do this and this was a family disease and he needed my help and, you know, I married him. So I said, sure, because that's what a good and loving wife does. My heart wasn't in it. I needed someone to blame. What I learned here is if I was going to blame someone, it had to be my folks. And I didn't like that. Again, that's the family disease. I didn't like the idea that it might be my folks that I'm blaming. So I began to go to ACA meetings way back when. And talk about people, and that's then, not now, but talk about people that lived in the problem. That's what I encountered in the early days, some 30 years or so ago, was, you know, I thought, well, okay, I'll get to the root of the problem. I'll fix them, all of them. There isn't a member of my family who wants fixing. There's not one of them, including my husband. So I've been out of a job for a while. And, you know, then I thought, well, here in these rooms, I thought, well, they talked about sponsorship. So I got a sponsor. She helped me. And then I began to sponsor women pretty early on because I could talk a good game. I could read the steps. I began speaking. People were attracted. You know, it worked. And so I fixed them for a good long time. I mean, and the rooms allow us to do that, really. I mean, or at least they allow you the illusion of doing that. And so back to that awareness, acceptance, action. You know, I was doing all the action stuff, and nobody was handing me a diploma. No one was handing me a diploma. They said, keep coming back. And you know, what I've really come to accept here is I really do look for people to blame. Even when the doctor told me about Parkinson's, my natural tendency is to, how'd I get that? You know, I figure it out. Help the doctors out. Help anybody out. And you know, what I've learned here is that's about my own not being able to accept who I am. In my body, in my in my flesh, that I'm not quite good enough. If I'd figured it out, then I wouldn't maybe have this, or if I had been healthier, or if this, or if that. And that's really this cycle that I did around the family disease of alcoholism. But you know what? Today, I have friends. Today, I have women that I sponsor. Today, I have more than one sponsor because I'm a handful. And I'm very grateful for that. And today, my biggest, I guess, claim to recovery is most of the time I tell the truth. And where I grew up, sick as our secrets, that was a rule. You don't tell anybody. Whatever it is. And I have a family that lives by that today. If you make a mistake, you don't admit it. If you're prejudiced, you don't let anybody know. If you stole something, you don't tell anybody. You know, and that's very contrary to what I hear in these rooms, what we all hear in these rooms. I mean, read the steps. Take an inventory. Sick as your secrets. From survival to recovery. Yeah, I was surviving. I really was. And I can go back to surviving today. But I don't want to. I want to learn how to tell the truth and like telling the truth. I want to learn how to say to my mom, who's still alive, 87 years old, still mean. She is. I love her dearly, but she's a mean woman because she grew up with this disease too. But, you know, my uncle, he was a strange fella. That's the kind, you know, they didn't call it alcoholism. He was strange. Or peculiar. Or, I mean, you know all the words. So, you know, she grew up with that stuff too, I believe. And she loves my sister. I'm the oldest. I have a sister who's an addict, alcoholic, by her own admission, several DUIs, can't really, doesn't need these rooms, doing it her way, and don't tell me what to do. But I will tell you that my mother is sicker than my sister. So if anyone in this room is sitting here believing for the least little bit that this is not a family disease, that it doesn't affect all of us that are influenced or affected by the disease of alcoholism or addiction. It does. What we get here is tools to learn how to live life to its fullest in spite of that. And allow people to be who they are. Today, and I don't celebrate it, but I can say my mom is mean. And I love her. I don't always like her. And what's her meanness about? Her meanness is about she would choose my sister and my sister's way of life over spending a minute in these rooms. Over saying to me, Sherry, you might be right. She would defend my sister to her dying day because nobody really understands her. Nobody really cares. If we just cared a little more, if we just hugged her a little more, we just accepted her a little more, then it would be different. We've had all the breaks in life. My mom will tell us that. And we are very blessed people. Very blessed people. In my family, my little family. But we have the normal ups and downs of life. We all do. We all do. So I can say today, most days, my mom's mean, and I love her. And I'm going to take care of her to the best of my ability. And I'm going to invite her to my home. And I'm going to try and be the best me I can be in support of her and her well-being. And yes, I'm learning with the help of women and men in these rooms to set some boundaries where I can take care of myself, which is not something I do naturally, because what I want to do is fix you, any you, and then tell you how to do it, and because then the focus is off from me. And that's very much about action for me. But you know, it says here, become aware of that, accept it, and then do what? Exactly what they told me the first meeting I went to. Whatever you used to do, honey, don't do it anymore. And it was crummy examples, like, if you go out this parking lot and you turn right to go home, try turning left tonight. Who does that? Who does that when you know the right will work? But that's the kind of stuff they told me. Take those risks. Do it different. And you know, I don't know. I think that's part of what keeps me coming back, because I need to know. I need to know. I don't know why it works. I don't even know how it works. I mean, I know we have steps. I know we have the slogans. I know I talk to people. I see women in these rooms, men too, today, men too, that are battered and beat up, and they work the steps, and they learn how to not be battered and beat up. And I meet women like myself who are arrogant, smug, and self-righteous. I mean, pretending that way anyway. You know, strong women, dominant. And they soften up a little bit. And we're reading and working the same 12 steps. How does it work? How does it work? I think it's grace. I think it's God's plan. I really do believe it's a spiritual program. I really do believe that we are intended to be happy, joyous, and free. And I think in these rooms, by telling the truth, working on those slogans, holding on to those steps, and someone said it earlier, and this is, I think, for me, the guiding principle, accepting the we, not the I. That we're in this together. I'm not intended to do it alone. I probably won't do it alone. I probably can't do it alone. And see, that's the irony to me. In the system that I grew up in, we were taught. I can remember my dad, God love him, and I do, saying things like, "We're all right, the world's all wrong." And he believed it. He believed it. Now, that is so contrary to what I believe today. I mean, and that's not to say that our world isn't a little messed up some days, and that I don't wonder, where is God in all of this? But I do know that God is in all of this. And I believe you do too. Otherwise, I don't think you'd be here. I mean, you wouldn't be saying, what's a speaker going to tell me or share with me? I mean, shared experience, strength, and hope really wouldn't matter. Because we grow up, we live in a culture that says, you can do it, honey. And I don't think individually we can do it. I think I've been to enough conventions. If you haven't been to the Yosemite Convention, I'm putting in a little plug for it. I mean, I've been to lots of conventions. But if you love the outdoors and you're looking for a higher power, go to the Yosemite Summit in November over the weekend before Thanksgiving. It's amazing. Now, I think it's amazing for me because that's part of where we partied hardy. And it's where we found our best recovery. Because it's a real spiritual place. We're there, people like you and me. God's there. And if you doubt it for 1 minute, all you have to do is go outside and look at the mountains. You know, we're going to the Vancouver International Al-Anon Convention. It's a dream of mine, although it's scary as heck because I know there's going to be lots of people there. Lots of people. And, you know, I'm kind of like it. I kind of like sometimes thinking I'm all by myself. Or certainly just he and I. You know, there's that fantasy too. And some of that's a carryover from even the drinking days. I can remember going to the parties, putting the makeup on and saying, today will be different. Just like he talks about. This party will be different. So in many ways, I guess part of my message is I really do want you to believe it's a family disease. We're all affected. But the gift is the potential for family recovery. And I can tell you that my two older daughters have both tried Alateen in their day. One of them liked it. She loved the social side of it. She loved it. The steps were okay, too, and she had a sponsor, and she went to SCAC, and it was kind of cool. She was a party girl. The other one didn't because it was reflective of her father, and I don't think to this day she believes he's an alcoholic because she might be one, too, in training anyway. Our son is a highway patrolman, 26 years old, never seen his father drink a day in his life. Thinks we're a little weird. But loves us dearly. And I will tell you, each one of those kiddos, in their own way, grown up and adult, have recovery as a result of us having grown up in this program. They've gotten it by osmosis. Now, they can't recite the 12 steps. Some days I can't either. But they know what it is to live them. They know what it means that life's unmanageable. And they know what it means to say that I can't. Maybe he can, and I think we'll let him. You know, that's the attraction part. That's the attraction part. You know, I mentioned to you, again, this is a personal share, but, you know, when I discovered I had the Parkinson's, God bless us, the first place I went looking for, aside from the exercise class, which is what they told me was going to help, was a support group. And you'd be surprised how many people I meet who think the last thing in the world they want is a support group. Because they think of rooms like this, too. They think of it as being sick people. So we have a little secret here. And it's that toolbox of recovery. And it is the promise of happy, joyous, and free. And I'm not saying every single day I feel that way. I don't. I have a friend who's sitting here tonight who told me just a little bit ago, I'm angry. And, you know, I want to go and just say, oh, honey, don't be angry. But you know what? Anger's a feeling. It's the only one I had. I've got a lot more now, and I'm really proud of it. I have some choices. You know, they showed me that nice little chart with all those faces on it, you know, about, fun, you know, this is serious business. It's much easier to be angry. It's much easier to have someone to blame. It really is, than to be able to say, well, what does it mean to be happy, joyous, and free in spite of this? And you know, for me today, and I'm going to kind of move on wrapping up here, is it's about where am I today? Where are we today? Where do we stand today? Where are my feet today? I mean, I look back, yes, I do and have done lots of inventories, sometimes more than one a day. You know, yes, I continue to have resentments. I really do. I continue to get angry. But I have recovery tools today. And I know that if I have a resentment, I mean, somebody told me in a meeting once, It's like taking poison and expecting him to die. That's what a resentment is. I'd want that? No. I want to live. So those are choices that I have today. We all have them. We have the choice to live a full, recovering life. I don't want to be recovered. Because every time I get recovered today, every time I get close to it, every time I think, oh, maybe graduation's close, then something weird happens, like, how would you like to come out and speak? I'm sick, you know, I mean. And you know what happens for me is someone says, I'll drive you. And someone else says, well, you can sit down if you want. And so what, you shake? And, you know, all those kinds of things. And, you know, when I got here, I remember going into therapy. Because maybe they could help. But I went into therapy because it would probably be better to pay for it than, you know, who could trust a bunch of people that were saying they'd give it for free or just a buck in the bucket or whatever it was. So I went to therapy, and I remember telling the therapist, I don't have a single friend. And he said, not one. And I said, not one. And you know, I believed it. I really did believe it. And the truth is, it probably was pretty true. I had lots of people who I was acquainted with, but nobody that I trusted. And I don't think even my family of origin trusted me. I didn't trust me. I mean, I had to do some things I wasn't real proud of, or I thought I had to do some things I wasn't real proud of. I mean, I was married to an alcoholic. I didn't know that was the label, but, you know, when you drink a lot, it takes money. So, you know, I thought, who's going to feed the kids? I have to feed the kids. So, you know, I cheated, borrowed, stole, whatever I had to do that. Not a person knew that. I'm not proud of it. But you know what? I took care of my family. I did what I had to do, and I've been able to make the amends for it. And you guys gave me that. You told me I could look in the mirror. My very first sponsor said to me, honey, after the junior God button thing, the next lesson was, have you looked in a mirror? I buy all the women I sponsor today a mirror. What for? Look in the mirror, they said. Look in the mirror. I said, that's nuts. I look in the mirror every day. I'm a professional woman. I'm going to the bank. I'm putting the makeup on. No, look in the mirror. Pretty early on in the program, they said, you want to sit on a convention chair thing, whatever it was, forum, whatever. The topic we want you to talk about is fun. Fun? There was nothing fun about any of this. Look in the mirror, they said. You know, I didn't know what it was to smile, really. I mean, I smiled for pictures, and I smiled if my boss came in the room, and, you know, the things you had, obligatory smile. But I didn't know what it was to smile. And today it's not my first response. My first response still is to blame, make sure it's right, you know, all that stuff. But today I can tell you I know how to smile. And I know that when God's in and God's in charge, I can smile. When I'm in charge, I'm not smiling. That's the look in the mirror. Know yourself, they said. I knew him. Even today, it's tough for me to say, I think I'd like to eat here without taking his temperature. Even today. 30 years of recovery. So I keep coming back. I take the opportunity when I get it to speak, serve on conventions, sponsor people, allow myself to be sponsored, And I will tell you the biggest gift of all I get, have gotten from here, is the idea that I am likable. That you, that's the generic you, might want to get to know me. And that's what I've learned from looking in the mirror. That maybe I can share something with you. And I've come to believe that here. And you know why? Because there's a higher power in my life. Because on a daily basis, I invite God, as I understand God and praise God. It wasn't my dad's God or my mom's God or, you know. In fact, my husband's sponsor said to me, tell me about your God. Tell you about my God. Yeah, tell me, what's he or she like? She. I thought he had been inside my soul. What's she like? And I told him about, we both did actually, about our God, as we understood God. And he said, you know, I don't think I'd turn my life over to him either. And I know you've heard that before. A lot of us grew up with that stuff. Or know God today. That's a big thing too. But, you know, in these rooms, I got permission to God as we understand God. And you know, that's changed. I've changed. My family's changed. My relationships have changed. Change. That's exciting. You know, I really have today the belief, and we're reading that book in our little Saturday morning group, my home group in Simi Valley, which today is an adult, child-focused Al-Anon meeting. 8:30 on Saturday mornings, and we read the literature. That's what we do there. And we started with the book From Survival to Recovery. We've read the Transforming Our Losses, and right now we're reading Discovering Choices. And we read that page by page, and we share our stories with it. And I'll tell you, we do that for about 30 minutes, and then we pick a recovery tool from the toolbox because we want to focus on the recovery. We all know the problem, alcoholism. And it's as varied as it is number of people in this room. But so is the recovery. Same 12 steps, same slogans, same rooms, different people. But I'm telling you, the recovery's the same. And you know how you know it? People smile. People celebrate birthdays. People get excited over you telling them, I stole something. Where else does that happen? You know, they get excited and they say, it's okay. Keep coming back. Yeah. Where else can you go and say, you know, they give the podium to someone that's willing to share their story. I mean, circuit speakers, all of it. I mean, that's our recovery. It's where we go and who we are. And it's grounded in our literature. So I think that's my final recovery message to you. If you haven't read our books, the Al-Anon books, if you haven't picked up those books and read them and read our pamphlets, sponsorship, what's it all about? Someone asks you about sponsorship, hand them that pamphlet. Read our books. Because there's a wealth of experience. And that's, I think, one of the greatest gifts to me is the slogans are explained, the steps are. And if you don't like one, you can pick up another one. If you don't like the way they explain the steps in that book, there's scads of them. As much as you want to do, as little as you want to do. But do it. Work the steps. Get a sponsor. Read the literature. Read the literature and share your stories. Thank you for allowing me to share mine.